Okay, maybe you'd like to find a Bible and look up the first book of the Bible, Genesis, and turn to chapter 37 of Genesis, because we're starting a new series and we're talking about Joseph. We're going to be talking about his life and we're going to be learning how he coped with what were for him massive ups and huge downs. And hopefully you got a program card as well, which will just tell you where we're going with that. And there's a program card out in the Oasis if you've missed that. But that's what we're looking at for the next 3 weeks. There are a lot of important questions in life, aren't there, to ask. But here's a good one to ponder. And it's one that we're going to be thinking about throughout this series. We'll keep coming back to it. Let me click on. Here we go. What would somebody in your circumstances, just think about your life right now. What would somebody in your circumstances do if they were absolutely confident that God was with them? What would be their next step in the circumstances that you're in right now? How would they respond to what's going on in their life right now? If we could clone your life and circumstances exactly right now and set it running with a sort of, you know how you program things, you can sort of program it with this underlying principle, God is there. God is in control. God is here. What would it look like if we could clone your life and set it running with that program running in the background all the way through? Maybe you're applying to university or something like that and it doesn't look like you get the one you want. What would you do if you were confident that God is with you? You're in a marriage that's in a tailspin, perhaps. And you've pulled all the levers and you've tried to fly it as best you can, but it is still in a nosedive. What would you do if you were convinced God is with me? Maybe you visit the GP and it hasn't gone so well. The diagnosis isn't what you wanted to hear. So how would you respond if you were positive? God is with me. And the story of Joseph is a story of a man who, from the age of 17, which is where we first meet him, from the age of 17, lived like that every day. God is with me. Whatever the circumstances, whether they were good or bad, he acted as if he knew in his heart, God is with me. And even when he had the opportunity, when things had started to go up and well and everything was coming up roses, when suddenly after years, 11 years of disaster after disaster after disaster, when finally he's on top of the hill, not at the bottom of it, when he has a chance even to pay people back for the stuff that's happened, he still even then acted like, what would I do knowing God is with me? He still behaved in that manner. Here's a principle we want to come back to over the next few weeks, and this is one we'll be kicking around. And it's this: when you respond in your circumstances, in your life, as if you are confident that God is with you, you will see God in those circumstances. You will meet him in the middle of it. Not because, here's the important thing, not because believing in God gets him to turn up, but because of a simple fact, God is already there. God is in those circumstances. And our problem is we often let circumstances, don't we, distort our vision and our response. We let it skew how we think of God. And we let it skew what we do in response. We respond to circumstances. We don't respond to God's promise, I am with you. And this is a great story, so we're going to jump in. There's quite a few. We're going to do only three chapters this morning. You'll be fine. Don't panic. We're going to have a quick whistle-stop tour, as Ali did earlier on, but we're going to fly through. And let's just have a look at his life, the first part of his life here, and see how he responded to it. Genesis 37, look that one up, and verse 2. See if you can find that. It's on the screen. This is what it says. This is the account of Jacob and his family. Jacob is Joseph's dad. And when Joseph was 17 years old, really young guy, he often tended his father's flocks. He works for his brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things they were doing. His brothers, that is. So Joseph's a teenager. He's a bit of a telltale, and he's a bit of a loudmouth. That's what's called being a teenager. That's what it's like. You know, you go through that stage where, oh, I know better, and you're wrong, and I'm right, and it's black and white. It's that sort of life. You are a bit like that. I was like that when I was a teenager. That's the first problem. First problem, bit of a loudmouth, bit of a telltale. Okay, that's a thumbs down. Here's the here's what happened next. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children. This is another problem. Favoritism in families. Avoid that like the plague. But Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other brothers because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe, but his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him. One night, Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. So we have some negative circumstances in Joseph's life right at the beginning, age 17. Part of it is Joseph's fault, because he's a son with a little bit of a superior attitude. He is. But part of it, really, the majority of it, is Jacob's fault. His dad's fault, because dad has a favoritism problem, and that always causes tensions and troubles in families. It always does. And Jacob compounds this problem in Joseph's life, because one day he sends Joseph to check on, to report on. Can you imagine being a brother with a brother who's reporting on you? Can you imagine that scenario? That's not going to engender intimacy and love, is it? You're not going to be sending flowers to that brother, are you? You're not just going to do that. So he sends him to report on his brothers who are tending the flock. Not a good idea, Jacob, especially when they're already paranoid about this brother who you love. And they see him coming, and they see an opportunity to get rid of him. So you know the story. Here's what happens. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. They grabbed him and threw him into the cistern, this sort of water container, a big hole in the ground with no water in it, fortunately, for dear old Joseph. Now, the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. Then, just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming towards him. So they throw their brother into a big hole in the ground, rip off his coat, throw him in. He's calling out in fear from the bottom of this. You can tell how much love is lost here. Help! And what do? They start their packed lunch. They sit down, they unwrap their sandwiches, and he's yelling down there in the hole. They don't give a damn. They don't give a damn about him. No love lost. And they're wondering what their next step is, which probably involved dessert, I suspect. What should we do next? Well, what's for pud? You know, and hello? And he's just ignoring him. They wonder what their next step is, and they see the caravan of traders heading to Egypt. This is what they say. This is what happens next. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain by killing our brother? Suddenly he's becoming magnanimous for some strange reason. Suddenly he's thinking about the interests of Joseph, I don't think. What will we gain by killing our brother? We'd have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, and this is tongue-in-cheek, after all, he is our brother. Because that's what you do with brothers, isn't it? You know, he is our brother, so let's just flog him into slavery for the rest of his life. Our own flesh and blood. Well, thank you, Judah. Brothers like that, who needs enemies? And his brothers agree. Why? Because it's the least effort. It's very, you know, it's very messy killing people. You have to cover it up and think of alibis and clean up the site. And, you know, it's really messy, but let's just sell him. That'll get rid of him, have the same effect. similar to killing him, but they're not too worried about that. So they're thinking of the prophet, they're thinking of the solution with the least effort, and suddenly they become men of mercy. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood, thank you boys. And Joseph heads off to a life of slavery in Egypt. Now stop there, and let's ask a couple of questions. Would God allow something like this to happen to someone he cared about? Would God allow this to happen to someone he loved? What's Joseph's crime? Joseph's crime is being a teenager. It wasn't his fault Dad treated him differently. It wasn't his fault. He didn't choose Dad's response to him. That was all Dad's stuff, and it caused all sorts of problems. But here he is, losing a privileged life, avoided being murdered only to be sold as a slave, and his future, his whole life changes in one moment. Sometimes our lives are like that, aren't they? Everything's going along fine, great, fantastic, everything's coming up, then suddenly one day, the bottom falls out of our lives, whatever it is, health, job, marriage, suddenly something happens. And Joseph can't read the end of the story, just like you can't read yours. He's in the same boat you are. But he's thinking, where is God? Where is he in all of this? His hands, God's hands, seem to be off the wheel, don't they? If we're honest, in Joseph's perspective, God is no longer in control. God has let go of the wheel. And his life is careering out of control. And when you look at your own difficult circumstances, whether it be job or family or prodigal children or health, whatever you look at, sometimes it feels like a mess, doesn't it? It feels like Joseph must have felt that everything is just out of control now. Where is God in all this? Joseph's story continues, and we don't get any answers initially. Joseph's story is continuing, chapter 39, and Joseph arrives in Egypt and is sold to Potiphar, who works directly for Pharaoh, so he's some high-ranking official. And you come across a phrase at this point in Joseph's life that just doesn't fit. It doesn't work, or it doesn't appear to work. Here's the phrase. The Lord was with Joseph. Are you seeing that? Are you feeling that about his life? Do you think Joseph was feeling that about his life? The Lord was with Joseph. It messes with your theology, doesn't it? It messes with your view of God, that little phrase, in terms of Joseph's circumstances. But that's precisely the point of this story. And it says, and this is odd too, it says this. Oh, sorry. The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. Potiphar didn't believe in Joseph's God. He didn't believe in it. But he notices something about this teenager that is different. He notices it's almost as if this kid acts every day, despite what's happening to him, as if God is with him. He notices that. So he puts him in charge of everything. And here's the point. When we respond in all circumstances as if God is with us, people do notice. When your life and your circumstances are not ones you wanted or ones that you had in your diary, and you respond as if God is with me, people notice. They really do. And I've seen it happen in churches all over the place. I've seen people going through the deepest valleys, having to deal with stuff that I have never had to deal with, heartbreaking, life-crushing stuff, the sort of stuff you end up going and talking to a counsellor about because it's that bad. And I've seen people behave as if God is with me. And I'm blown away whenever I see that. I think it's amazing. The ordinary people in the midst of circumstances that scream, God has left the building, stand there and say, God is with me. And act as if he is. They act as if he is. I've seen it. And I've noticed it every single time. People notice when you live like this. Verse 5 is a bit funny. Verse 5, from the day Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's household for Joseph's sake. If I'd have been Joseph at this moment, I would have said, now look, God, stuff's been a bit rough recently. Could you bless me for me rather than blessing Potiphar for my sake? Somebody else is blessed for your sake when you're going through that. It doesn't feel like a blessing, does it? It doesn't feel like a blessing when you bless them and you say it's for my sake. Thank you ever so much. Can I just go home? I would have said that if I were him. I would have gone, what's that about? Why are you blessing him? Now it's my turn, isn't it? And the story goes on, and Joseph encounters, guess what, a no-win situation now. So it's going from bad to worse. And now he's having a real trouble. Joseph, it says, was a very handsome and well-built young man. Obviously, I must be from Joseph's line. And what are you laughing at? Rotten lot. And Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Come and sleep with me, she demanded. Verse 6 and 7. And once again, God seems to have left Joseph in an impossible situation. It's been lousy so far, and now it's getting worse. He's damned if he does sleep with her, and he's damned if he doesn't, because that's going to go badly too. He cannot win this one. This is a no-win. You ever had a no-win? Doesn't matter what you do, you're going to lose somewhere. But listen to his response. This is how we know Joseph. There were no churches. The Bible hadn't been written. He couldn't pick up the Old Testament and say, Moses says. Moses isn't there yet. There's no Moses. It's just his Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, his dad, and that's it. And this God who made some promises a few generations back. That's all they've got. No church, no preachers, nothing. Listen to what he says. This is powerful. But Joseph refused. Look, he told her, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He's held nothing back from me except you. Because you're his wife, by the way. Let me just remind you of that. How could I do such a wicked thing? Listen to this. This is amazing. I don't get how he said this. It would be a great sin against God. Open brackets. Who has not been doing very much for me lately. Who has not really been a much of a blessing to me lately. Who so far my life has turned upside down. But it would be a sin against this God. That's what he says. That's staggering. Why would he declare a commitment to a God in these circumstances? Why would he do that? Somehow, he's now about 20-something. This 20-something kid understood something that we all miss. That his responsibility in these lousy situations was not to fix everything. His responsibility was not to sort everything out. His responsibility, he believed, was just this. To do what anybody would do who was convinced that God was with him. My next step will be based on that, not on my circumstances. That's the only explanation for why he responded like that. That can be the only reason. He was convinced God was with him. It's unbelievable. It's hard to remain faithful when God doesn't seem like he's been faithful to you. It's really hard. When you're being the good guy, when you're being the faithful guy, but it doesn't seem to be working, isn't it tempting to just abandon the right thing to do and just go with it? Because so far it's not worked out doing the right thing, has it? It seems as though every day we have a difficult decision to make. I can make decision based upon my interpretation of what's going on, my interpretation of circumstances, or I can make my decisions based on a promise that he is with me. And he does. He does. He makes a decision based on that idea. God is with me. So Joseph remains faithful to God and God rewards him. How? How does God reward him for doing the right thing? Potiphar's wife keeps up the pressure. One day she makes a grab for him. Joseph tears himself away. He leaves his cloak behind. This is how God rewards Joseph for acting like God is with me. Now that's a blank screen. When she saw that she was holding his cloak and he had fled, she called out to her servants. Soon all the men came running. Look, she said, my husband has brought this Hebrew slave here to make fools of us. He came into my room to rape me, but I screamed. And when he heard me scream, he ran outside and got away, but he's left his cloak behind with me. That's his reward for doing the right thing. Really, God? I mean, do you not feel that? You don't want to go, have you ever said that to God when it's all gone pear-shaped and you've thought, I will stick with you, God. I will do what's right despite all the crap behind me. I will do what's right. And then that goes wrong. And you think, really, God? Now is Joseph being punished for doing the right thing, and to rub salt in it, he gets the same, here's the annoying thing, he gets the same punishment he would have got if he'd slept with her. That's the truth. It's the same punishment. You ever feel like this? Throw up your hands and say, why am I even a Christian? Why do I pray? Why am I faithful? And like Joseph, sometimes you feel like you just end up in prison at the end of doing everything that you think, God, if he were here, would thank you for. So Potiphar took Joseph, it says, here's his reward, and threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were held, and there he remained. And here's that phrase again. But the Lord was with Joseph. He was with Joseph in the prison and he showed his faithful love. You know what? At this point, if I were Joseph, I would have said this to God. God, God, please stop being with me. I would have said that. God, please, will you stop being with me? Will you go and be with somebody else? Will you be with my brothers? Will you be with them a lot? Because that would make me feel better. But right now, you being with me isn't making me feel better. Will you go and be with them? I can't take it anymore. Since you've been with me, I've been attacked. I've been thrown down a well. I've lost my family. I've been sold into slavery. I've been accused of rape. And now I'm in a dungeon. God, go and be with somebody else, please. Give me a break. But it says this, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him his faithful love. It says that. The Lord was with Joseph in prison, showed him his faithful love, and the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. But God, Can you show me your faithful love by keeping me out of prison in the first place? I don't want to know the warden. I never wanted to meet the warden. I never wanted to be on the inside. I wouldn't mind popping over to his house for dinner, but I don't want to know him in the way that I know him now. Can you please do something else? If God is showing you his faithful love, you don't even know the prison warden, right? You should never have to meet him if God is showing him your faithful love. If God is with you, you're not in the prison. What is this all about? How can God, that we trust, and who says he loves us, be a part of all this and allow all this to happen to some teenage kid? But you know what Joseph did while he was in prison? This is amazing. I don't get this. I don't know many people who could do this. You know what he did while he was in prison? He did, whatever the circumstances, he did whatever anybody would do who was convinced that God was with him. That was his next step. How would I behave if God is with me? Well, here's what I'll do. And that's what he did. And when he did that, this is what happened. Before long, it says, before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was, here it is again. I hate this phrase. The Lord was with Joseph and caused everything he did to succeed. Big question. If this were you or me, would you have bailed out a long time before this? If this was you or me, would you have said, enough, way before we got here? Because God, if I don't see you in the circumstances, I'll go and trust something else. I'll go and do something else. I'll go and be something else. But I'm not carrying on acting as if you are with me when I don't see it. But Joseph did. Once again, Joseph behaves like he believes God is with me. And once again, the prison warden notices and sees this, that there is something different about this guy, Joseph. He doesn't behave like everybody else does. He's not trying to climb the walls or dig a tunnel. He's been the model prisoner. He's helping the warden. What is that about? And the story goes on, and Joseph encounters two members of the prison community. One is Pharaoh's old baker, and the other one is Pharaoh's cupbearer, and they see something in Joseph too. So they start to share, I mean, I've never done this to anybody except I'm really close to, they start to share their dreams with Joseph. So he must have trusted this guy. They must have really respected this guy in an amazing way, because you don't go to, I mean, if I walk up to you and tell me you my dreams from last night, you probably go, really? You know, I mean, you have to have a certain degree of relationship to do that. But they see something and they tell him his dreams. Joseph interprets these dreams and he tells the cupbearer there's really good news. Not for the baker, I'm afraid, but for the cupbearer, he says, there's really good news. You're going to be out of here soon. You're going to be out of here soon. And then in chapter 40 and verse 14, and you'll see, actually, Joseph was a human being. You see his humanity coming out here. We get a glimpse that he isn't so different from you and me. Because listen to this. This is what Joseph says when he knows you're getting out. You're getting out. Are you going back to Pharaoh? And this is what he says. And please, please remember me and do me a favor when things go well for you. Mention me to Pharaoh. So he might let me out of this place, for I was kidnapped from my homeland, the land of the Hebrews, and now I'm here in prison, but I didn't do anything to deserve it. Please remember me to this guy. Joseph isn't in cloud cuckoo land. He's not in denial about the reality of his situation. He's not saying, oh, it's not happening. He's really there. He knows it's happening. He knows it's not right, and he knows it's not just. He's wrestling with all this stuff. And this is our prayer, isn't it? When stuff goes wrong. When circumstances sort of go to hell, quite literally. Just get her to say yes. Just get him to reconsider. Just get me that interview. It's the sort of last ditch prayer. Just mention me. Just mention me. Remember me. This is the one break that might change everything. Please, 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 let this one prayer get answered. This is my last chance. Now I'm going to depress you. Here you go. Here's how the chapter ends. Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. That's the end of chapter 40. Oh, but here's the good news. But the Lord was with Joseph. That's all right then, isn't it? You feeling good about that? For Joseph? That's fine then, isn't it? Because the Lord was with Joseph. Does that seem impossible to you? Feels a bit impossible, doesn't it? Because at some point in life, you find yourself staring up at the ceiling, and some of us have been there, and you're looking at the ceiling as if it's made of glass, because every last-ditch prayer to change the circumstances, to change the string of events, to change one disaster after another, last-ditch prayer just seems to be bouncing off the ceiling. And Joseph, at the end of chapter 40, his prayer just seems to hit the wall and bounce back. One thing, God, just one. No. And you're sort of saying, as you make that prayer up to the ceiling, do you care? I'm about to give up. God, I'm about to give up because nothing has changed. Nothing is getting better. I'm about to give up. What am I supposed to do? God, what am I supposed to do now? How am I supposed to get through this, God? And the answer is very simple, but it is incredibly difficult. The answer is this. You act as if you know deep down God is with you. Every day we have to make a choice, don't we? Am I going to define God by my ability to interpret the circumstances around me? Or am I going to define him by what he's promised to me? Am I going to trust him? And that's the decision we have every time our spouse opens their mouth and offends us. Am I going to act now as if God is with me? That's the decision every time you have an opportunity to get back at somebody or take advantage of somebody, because now you're the shoe's on the other foot and now you're the one in control. Am I going to act like God is with me? That's the same decision you have when God's blessed you in your career or your finances. It's all the same, whether you're on the mountaintop or in the valley. Am I going to take my next step based on the promise God is with me? Or am I going to take the next step based on my interpretation of what is going on around me? Which is it going to be? Because whenever I read the New Testament, I read the words of Jesus, I'm tempted to think this is unrealistic. You ever read Jesus' words and think, that's not realistic, Jesus? That isn't the real world, Jesus. Will you please say something we can do that doesn't sound bizarre and unconnected? I'm tempted to think he's saying unrealistic, and that's why the words sometimes Jesus says to me, it just bounce off. That's not going to work, is it? But Jesus walked this earth. Do you know how he walked this earth? He took every single step that he walked this earth absolutely convinced of one thing. Do you know what it was? God was with him. He walked this earth every day convinced God is with me. And Jesus, we're also very convinced that God is with you. He made you a promise every day. So he said things that sound ridiculous. Listen to this. Talking to people who could barely pay their bills and didn't know what the next day was going to bring. Listen to this. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God and trust in me. But Jesus, don't you see what's going on around me? Are you blind? Don't you see? And it's not changed. And sometimes it's getting worse. Don't you see what's going on around me? Well, yes, says God, but I'm not telling you not to worry because of what's going on around you. I'm telling you not to worry because I promise I am with you. That's why you shouldn't worry, because I am with you. Because if God is with me, and I know that, my heart doesn't need to be troubled. John 14, verse 18 is another one. Listen to this. Jesus says, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives. You know why? Because the world bases their peace on their circumstances. What's going on around me will determine whether I'm peaceful or not. Jesus says, my peace I give you, not the peace the world gives. So don't let your hearts be troubled and don't be afraid. Final challenge. Here's the final challenge. What does somebody in your marriage do if they're confident God is with them? What would somebody in your marriage do if they know deep down and walk every day convinced God is with me? What does somebody struggling with your son or your daughter do if they're confident God is with me? What would they do? What does somebody in your job or your financial situation, what would they do if they were confident God is with me? If they trusted a promise rather than interpreting circumstances, what would they do? And that's what God wants us. That's what God wants us to take a deep, deep breath and do. And you do have to take a deep breath. But he wants us to do that. And when we do, we find God in those circumstances. You knock on the door, he says, I'll open it. You call, I'll be there. I may not give you the answer you want, but I'll be there. And here's something else that will happen. People around you will see that there is something so very different to you, to everybody else who responds to circumstances. You're responding to a promise. And they will say, perhaps, that's because God is with them. You know, next week, things take a massive upswing for Joseph. Rod's coming and talking about Joseph. And next week, you know, it's all been that way this week. It all goes that way next week. It goes absolutely, you know, it's vertical. But guess what? He doesn't change his strategy. Joseph doesn't change his strategy. The week after that, he has an opportunity for revenge and payback that some of us can probably only dream about the people that have hurt us in our life. But guess what Joseph does? He doesn't change his strategy. He lives every day convinced that God is with him, and he acts like that's true. In the lows and in the highs, that's what he does. Jesus made you a promise. I will not leave you. I will not leave you. I will not abandon you. I am with you. I am with you. Now go and live your life as if you believe that it can be done. It can be done. Here's how King David said it. I want you to finish this one off for me. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because thou art with me. What would that look like? What would that look like? Let's take a risk. What would that look like for one day of your life? If you were going to respond to every phone call, every email, every conversation, every decision, every problem, and every blessing, if you were to respond to every one of those as if you were convinced God is with me, what would that look like? How would that be different?